What's up, everybody? Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Power Play Podcast. Before we get into it, I would like to remind everyone to please like and subscribe this independent podcast wherever you're listening. Let us know what you think of the show. Review. Your feedback means the world to us.
As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
It can't be a one-man show out there. Gotta have all the boys involved. Gotta be willing to go to the dirty areas.
Hey, what's up, all you NHL and all you hockey fans? Kevin Weeks here. Just want to say welcome to the Power Play Podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Power Play Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Milani, joined by, via Zoom, my brother, Vinny Milani, a.k.a. the one and only
mess that one up,
Vinny
buddy.
Milani, a.k.a. Vinny Power Play. Also joined by our newest co-host, Travis Jake, former professional ice hockey player for the hometown team, the Jacksonville Icemen, and most recently, the Fayetteville Marksmen. As I learned recently, not Fayetteville, Arkansas, Fayetteville, North Carolina. How are you, boys?
I'm good. How are you doing, man?
Fantastic here. We got a nice interview lined up for today. We have some news and notes for the first time in like four episodes, and this is our first episode with you, Travis. We're pumped to have you on. Let's get her going here, Vinny. Where are we going first?
After 4 weeks, we've finally accumulated enough news to actually make it worth it for a news and notes segment. We've got a great show ahead of us, though, boys.
Right.
We've got Wacy Rabbit coming up as our main event, a part of what I learned is not summertime, and I've been preaching that it's a summer interview series.
Oh, yeah, you idiot. It's still spring. We've released two interviews, both in the spring, for our summertime.
It's only because you guys live in Florida.
It's summer all the time.
It's always summer here. Yeah, that's what it is. Is.
Exactly. So we have Wacy Rabbit joining us as our main event, a part of our summer interview series. We have start, sits, call ups. We have a quick intro to the show with it's just a quick question. The quick question of the day, boys. Are you ready for it?
What is it?
It's what I was telling you in the show notes. In the show,
I'm looking through the show notes. I don't even see it.
I have two scenarios for both of you, and it is you have to start one, you have to sit one on the bench, and then you have to cut one. I'm giving.
Okay. Well, I heard Jake's already, and I didn't hear the answers though.
The fans not heard it, so you can shut your mouth over there and let me.
I'm just saying, let's go to Jake first, Vinny. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, Anthony, I'm the host of the goddamn show. I know what I'm doing.
Obviously not.
Starting off with Jake, you got to start one, you got to bench one, and you got to cut one. Pittsburgh guy, Sidney Crosby, Mario Lemieux, and Jaromir Jagr. Where are you going?
Start Mario Lemieux. Had chatted with you guys last time. I think if he would have been healthy, he would have been better than Gretzky. Personally, I think he's the best player to ever play a game. On the bench would be Sir Sidney Crosby. I think he's still to this day at the age of 33. He's the best player in hockey. He does it all. He can go out there and score 4 points if he needs to. He can also penalty kill, be great in his defensive zone. He's a complete 200-foot player. And I have to cut the great Jaromir Jagr. And my reasoning behind that, it's very simple. Crosby and Lemieux have never played for any single other team besides the Pittsburgh Penguins. And Jaromir Jagr has played for, Christ, 6 or 7, I think. So,
yeah.
Not that he wasn't an incredible player. And the other thing, too, for me is that he was only with the Pens for, I want to say, 8 years, 9 years, something like that. So I would say the bulk of his career was over in Russia and then in other teams. Not that that's discounting anything he did in Pittsburgh because he won 2 cups and – obviously one of the best players to ever come through the organization. But for me, when I think Pittsburgh hockey, as a Pittsburgh kid, and then as, you know, thinking as a fan, I think Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby. So those are the two guys that I do keep.
I'm not sure where Anthony is going with this, but I think the argument would not come from the Jagr standpoint. It would come from starting Sidney Crosby and benching Mario Lemieux.
Yeah, you have to cut Yags.
Yags is the easy cut.
That's the easy one. But for me, where we disagree is I would start Sid the Kid because, like you said yourself, complete player.
Fair. I mean, that was one of those, like, it's a toss up, man. We can get down to Crosby's. Yeah. They both had health injuries, but Crosby's played more. Like, you can get down into the nitty gritty of it, but.
Yeah, I would side with the starting the Sidney Crosby, but it is because of the 200-foot game. It's the being able to play in all three zones of the ice, and that is what I side with a little bit. Anthony, okay. I have.
You're talking about two of the best players.
Yeah,
of all time.
I mean, you're splitting hairs.
You're trying to start one and sit one. It's like, yeah,
Hey,
all right, here I'm changing my answer real quick, and the only reason is because Crosby has more cups. Yes. There you go.
Boom. All right.
Yes.
Three cups. Right. Somebody's got two. There. Yes. I changed my answer.
Victory. We're all on the same page.
So this next one is going to straight up. It's going to you, Anthony. It's for goalies. All right. Mike Richter, Patrick Waugh, John Van Beesbrook. Start, sit, cut. One, well, all three. Yeah.
That's a terrible question.
Is it not easy? Or is it easy? Or
it's
is
messed,
it?
It's messed up for me because it's like you're playing on my heart. Like those are three of my favorite goalies.
Exactly. I but hate you, so I would like to do that.
You have to cut the Beezer. It's very sad because he's a great goalie, and that's no slight to him. He's among two other absolute greats. Patrick Waugh, you got to start.
Okay.
He knows how to win the Stanley Cup. He knows how to win championships. He's the guy you want. When it comes down to it, in the most important game of your life, that's the guy you want. And Mike Richter is actually right behind him. So he's backing him up. If Patrick Waugh goes down, you know you can put Richter in to stop that penalty shot against Bure. You know you can do it. So that's my 1-2 punch there. Easy. That was actually way easier than I thought.
Yeah, I try to mess with you a little bit by picking all three of your favorite goaltenders. I knew
The Beezer might be my favorite, like, in my heart.
Yeah.
But the other two, Waugh, you got to go number one. Richter is right behind him because he has a Stanley Cup to his own name, represented USA in the Olympics. He's you know, one of the best American goaltenders to ever do it. So,
are you okay with that one, Jake?
Which plays in my heart as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Patrick Waugh. Yeah, no, I think Patrick Waugh is one of the top two goaltenders ever lived. So, Mike Richter went to my prep school though, so I do have a little bit of a nice little commonality there with Richter. So,
did you meet the
maybe
guy?
That pushes. No, he did speak at one of my graduations, but I didn't get a chance to meet him for more than just a handshake. But
great hair, great hair,
very good hair. He did have very good hair when I was at the graduation. But no, I do agree with that. I think Patrick Waugh, you know, he has more cups, he has more wins. I think just overall body of work, I gotta give it to Waugh.
Statistically, I could have thrown in Marty Brodeur instead of John Van Beesbrook, but I really wanted to mess with Anthony. I knew he would cut Marty Brodeur because of his hatred for Marty Brodeur. Am I correct? Would you have cut Marty Brodeur if I gave you Richter, Waugh, and Brodeur?
I would be blinded by that. Brodeur would be my easy toss out.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Stats mean nothing to you at all. Nothing at all. Your championship winning team. Yeah, exactly.
I think it's my heart.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So that was our quick question of the day. Now, boys, we move on to our starts, our sits, and our call-ups. Anthony, where are you going first? Wait a second. No. Jake. Where are you going first?
Oh.
I'm so used to just sending it over to you, and then I'm like, I don't want to do that this time around.
Let's do it.
All right. My starts. This is off the cuff because I just didn't think to write it down. My starts, I like we had in our conversation with Wasey, I do like the fact that the NHL is thinking about starting up the season with some kind of remote locations. I did read the article, and there are a lot of locations that – haven't really had any sort of NHL experience. I think I read Manchester, New Hampshire. They had an East Coast hockey team and an American League team, but never an NHL. Never an NHL organization. Same with North Dakota. I think they did something on Grand Forks because that rink, I've never played there, but it's basically an NHL rink. And then I'm being biased because I did read that Pittsburgh was one of the lists, one of the cities on the list, and makes me feel good and a little bit safer that that there's a little less of the COVID in my county. But I think that's going to be a great idea. I think it's going to be very different. I think it's going to be interesting for obviously the areas that haven't had an NHL team, like I said, with Manchester and Grand Forks. For those fans, it's going to be great to see a lot of NHL action. I think I'm very excited. I don't know if we'll get a lot of it because it is kind of, you know, under wraps in the NHL, but it would be kind of cool to see six or seven teams or however many teams it is kind of in the same area for a long period of time playing games. Being able to maybe see some interviews, I don't necessarily like together, but just, you know, having the ability to go hang out with someone on another team, maybe one of your junior friends or one of your college buddies plays for a different team. That would be kind of cool to see that kind of aspect of it that you don't really get to see in the NHL because you are on the move so much. So I think that would be really cool to see.
Now, does that like, I feel like that's got to suck too, though. Like the people in Manchester, the people in North Dakota, those fans, like, they never really get to witness NHL NHL hockey in person, and then it comes to your town, and you still can't witness it because it's closed off from the public.
Yeah, that's gotta suck.
Put a slap in the face.
Yeah,
I do have to say, I did play a little bit in Manchester my second year pro, and they it's a great hockey town. Unfortunately, I don't know the exact reason why they lost that team, but they're a great hockey town. So even if they're not able to go see it, hopefully, obviously, if they're going to have the team there, there's going to be some things open up in the area. So maybe they'll run into some players. And even just like those teams, I mean, yeah, those guys get the Boston channel, but I'm sure you guys know from being up there. But to be able to get to watch, you know, however many teams, 5, 6, 7 teams that you might not normally get to watch unless you have the NHL package. Yeah. I think that would be kind of cool. Even if, like I said, even if you're not able to see it live, even though those cities never had an NHL organization, they still have some pretty damn good hockey.
Like, oh, yeah.
It was always a great college team. Manchester won a Calder Cup.
Manchester they went to Ontario, didn't they? They're now the Reign. They were the Monarchs before for the Kings, now they're the Reign, right?
They were the Monarchs for these, so they switched. So Ontario was the East Coast League, I think my first year. And then my second year, they switched to, they flip-flopped. So Manchester was American League, Ontario was East Coast, and then they switched. So they turned that into the East Coast. And it was actually really cool, just side note, that organization was great. They treated it like an American League team.
That's awesome.
When you were there as an East Coast player. But like I said, I think that'd be really cool for them to kind of see
that Ontario
hockey.
The Ontario Reign has sick style, by the way. Just letting you guys
know. That's Ontario in California, right? Not in Canada. Correct. Yeah.
Look at you trying to come back on the geographical channel over here, buddy.
I just want to.
Confirm
that.
They did it so, because if you look at back when they were, it was like San Jose's farm team was in Worcester, Mass.
Good pronunciation right there, buddy.
No sense.
4 years. LA's was in Manchester. Phoenix was in Springfield, I think, at the time. Trying to think of who's the other California team. I can't think of Anaheim. Yeah. They were Norfolk.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So they're San Diego now. Okay. So those teams wanted to flip it. So they tried to make it a little bit less travel for those organizations. Because if you think about it, and from my experiences playing on the East Coast, like, you're more likely to get guys called up frequently AHL to NHL, I think, rather than getting guys sent down from AHL to East Coast League. So it makes more sense to have your American League team closer to the big club.
Yeah, proximity is a huge thing for sure. We saw this year with Vegas now getting San Antonio moving closer to them as their farm team now. So I mean, it's definitely proximity is a major thing. So where are you going for your sit?
Ooh,
this is like the one that can I go to my call up first, because I think that might be.
Everyone just breaks the rules on this show.
I'm sorry. Well, I can't.
You're good.
Wild card.
Everyone's right. a wild card.
Let's do it.
All right, so my call up, I think people need to learn about the Samuel Adams Mountain Berry beer.
Ooh.
My quick backstory is my favorite beer is Purple Haze. It's a lager that has some raspberry ting to it. And I actually learned about it in Jacksonville at Hoptinger.
So, 100%.
Little plug there. And I went to the store the other day, got some Purple Haze, enjoyed that, and then went to get a couple more, and they were out. So I went with the Samuel Adams Mountain Berry. No free ads, but that is the closest that I found to the Purple Haze, and
nice.
I very much enjoy
it. We're going
to
make it a thing. It's now going to be a rating system now, just like Prez. You have to now rate the beer that you bring up now. Scale of 1 to 10, what are you giving it?
One sip, everybody knows the rules.
For the Purple Haze, even though it's my favorite beer, it's about an 8.2. The Samuel Adams is a very, very good beer, but I give it maybe a 7.1.
Are you a generous scorer though? Are you? I mean, because like Prez is not
pretty high.
It's kind of hard. I feel like it's kind of hard with beer and pizza, because beer, there's so many different flavors. Where it's pizza, it's like it's pizza. There's some different toppings, but if you're doing cheese pizza, so I personally like this type of beer. So again, I keep bringing up beer, and everyone who listens to the podcast is thinking I'm a booze bag or something. But I have my two every couple of days, and calls it for me. I get normally pretty tired, but my sit would be the American League. My sit's the American League.
Uh-oh.
And I think it's very tough. It's going to be very tough for the NHL to come back, and I personally think that it's very, very. Frustrating, I would imagine, for guys in the American League to kind of sit even more on the fence. It was nice for us in the East Coast League to kind of get that right away. Hey, we're done. Like, I understand the American League's a little bit closer to the NHL ranks and the organization head, but if it's this long of a process for the NHL, looking at some of the American League markets, Charlotte and Chicago Wolves, like who's going to, if you're going to really watch a Chicago team, you're going to watch the Blackhawks.
I mean, yeah. Right?
So I think, I guess it's not a sit. I guess it's kind of a sit. I would just say for their own benefit to just cut the cord and say, this is the season's over. Yeah. And I haven't really been following up a ton on their side of it. Cause we've obviously been talking about the NHL, yeah. But for me, I think that that's got to be for those guys' sake, especially those guys that are, looking to go to the NHL and try to get their games. I mean, if they're playing these games real quick, or they're going right into playoffs, like those guys are just sitting on pins and needles waiting to see maybe they get a call up. At this point, I would just say for their own sake, for their own sanity, just got to call. As much as it sucked for us to get that phone call on a Thursday and find out Monday that we were done, it was a little bit less stressful than like, I got to sit at home and do push-ups and squats every single day so I don't, I got to stay in shape. So yeah. I think for those guys, I think those guys just they deserve to find out now either, yes, we're playing, or, there's not a way we're going
to
do this.
So you're sitting the AHL as in, like,
they need to be done.
Yeah.
I think I'm sitting the situation.
I'm
sitting the fact that they're still in limbo.
Yeah.
I think they need to just be like, hey.
That's it.
It sucks, but like, let's get ready for next year. Yeah,
they're not the
big money maker in the organization. Obviously, the NHL is still
100%.
In a place where the NHL might not have fans, they're going to lose money. Imagine how it would be playing in the American League with no fans.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah,
it's definitely.
I think for their own benefit, it'd just be like, just call it.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough situation. That was a good start to call ups on your. Technically, this is your free debut because your start sits call is made into the part two edition, which can be heard on Patreon. Don't forget to check out our Patreon at the Power Play Pod. You'll get used to that. I'm full of just cheap plugs. That's what I do. Anthony, where are you going for all show? That is just unnecessary. Where are you going first, buddy?
Let's go to my call up first, true wild card fashion. I'm calling up inline hockey skates right now in a time where there's no ice available. You can't go to the rink to play. I'm seeing a lot of my friends, a lot of even pro athletes. I saw Mitch Marner out there in his driveway dangling his dog. So inline skates right now are giving hockey players an opportunity to stay active, stay on skates, and play a little hockey. So calling them up, I call for everyone who's missing hockey a little bit, maybe go online, try to get a cheap pair, maybe a used pair off eBay or something.
Aren't you trying to do that?
I've been perusing eBay and like Hockey Monkey to try to find some cheap deals. I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but I'm going. It's only a matter of time. I'm going to so I can get back on the skates and
feel good. Your video went so wild on that one, buddy.
Your
voice was perfect. Video was like so far behind, and then you're like super sped up. It was unreal. It was great. I loved it. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that to me. Don't do that.
Anyway,
where are you going next, buddy?
I'm going to start the hockey images that precede unfortunate events Twitter page. I discovered these guys.
I think it's hilarious.
I discovered these guys a couple days ago. So it's like there's one of like Dennis Weidman like coming up on the official. There's one of Corey Perry warming up at the Winter Classic.
Dude, they're hilarious.
Like, there's so many. Amazing photos on that page. I encourage everyone to go check it out for a good laugh. It got me going. So I'm starting them in a time where hockey images make me sad. That actually made me laugh. And I'm gonna sit the NFL draft because I don't give a shit. Everyone's all up in arms about it. ESPN did this. ESPN did that. I don't give a shit. I want hockey back. I want to watch my games on the TV. We should be enjoying the playoffs right now.
Wow, you are.
Playoffs should be on right now.
We should be grateful that there is some type of live sports being televised right
now.
It's not like actual sports, but it's like this is.
I'd rather watch Greyhound racing than the NFL draft.
It was not entertaining, and I'm an NFL guy. I love
the draft.
I'm an NFL guy, but it was just.
This was history making. This was a history making NFL draft, man.
Yeah. That's it. That's my start sit call ups. Vinny, what do you got for
you? You know, you like You started off okay.
You're not done, huh?
No, you started off okay with your call up, and then you really got into it with your start. I was like, okay, this is awesome. This might be your best start sit call up you've ever had. And then you really brought it down with that one. Okay, so that's tough.
Because I'm an NFL guy.
I'm on your side, Andy. Yeah, I'm like, on your side 100%.
Get out of here, you guys. It's awful, awful taste.
No one should be excited about that right now. We should be watching playoff hockey, and the fact that we're not just makes me sick.
So I'm going into my starts at call-ups now. I am starting the NHL 20 Players League that was announced for however they're going to televise it or put it on YouTube or whatever they're going to do with the social media. They announced that the NHL players are going to be playing NHL 20 together. There's a Players League that's going to happen during this quarantine time. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. MLB's doing it with MLB The Show. I think the NFL's doing it with Madden a little bit. And it's going to be a lot of fun. No matter how shitty the game is, no matter how shitty NHL 20 is, it's going to be fun to see these players interact and play these games live. This will be your live sports. You can watch this instead of the draft, okay? There you go.
I'd rather, honestly.
I bet, you asshole. I'm sitting, can I sit myself? Am I allowed to sit myself this week?
I tell you to do that every show.
Ouch, wow, everyone's on me today. I'm sitting myself for coming up with the summer interview series and releasing it during the spring. I had no idea. I didn't even think about that.
We're like 3 months away from summer, and you're doing a summer release series.
I have a quick suggestion. Can we call it maybe the off season series? Now that
most leagues
are off season, even though it is a little bit early, that would be a little more appropriate. Maybe
I feel like the summer interview series sound like it flows so well together, though. Like
it sounds honestly, nice, whenever we brought it up last episode, I honestly didn't think twice.
Exactly. So no one until they hear this episode, that no one's going to think of it, and then they're going to hear me talk about it, and then be like, "Wow, this guy's a real jackass." Okay, so. It's unbelievable.
You are a real jackass.
You know when Jake was
they've been listening for a while, they already know.
Jake was talking about it earlier. He said he was going off the cusp with everything, and I was remembering the time I said off the cuff during one of our episodes and got creamed for it. So yeah, that was a thing. I'm calling up.
That's great.
Did I say that? And is it off the cusp? I don't even know.
It's off the cuff.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
I don't remember saying.
No, no.
I think you're making that up.
Yeah, No. You did say it right. You did say it right. I was trying to remember what it actually was.
So you said it wrong
again.
Trying to quote him.
Yes.
Wow, you're
an
idiot.
Yes. So I said it wrong.
This is my rookie hazing, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It's getting torched.
But it's really just me sounding like an idiot is what it is, and that's normally 90% of the show. So I'm gonna call up. I'm going to call up the Boston FaceTime party with Keith Yandel, Kevin Hayes, Chris Wagner, and Chris Kreider. It was one of the funniest. They do those player interviews now over Zoom, just like what we're doing. And there's been a lot of good ones, but this was definitely the best one. It was absolutely hilarious. Keith Yandel, Kevin Hayes ripping on each other.
Yeah.
Chris Kreider, Chris Wagner there. Oh, it was just – it was fantastic. If you haven't checked that out.
They're clowns. It's amazing. I love it.
It is. And that's what needs to be showcased more. And I love seeing that. Everyone loves seeing it. So that's my starts, its call-ups. That's everyone's starts, its call-ups. It's now a little bit more difficult for me to do my job because now I have to say everyone starts, its call-ups. And it's just weird. Okay? It's just weird. Without further ado, Anthony, we don't have anything else. I don't have anything else planned for the show. Are you guys ready to get into the interview?
I do. I have one more. Oh. I have one thing. Uh-oh. Yeah, I do have one thing. It's our ad.
We now would like to welcome onto the show current Iceman forward. He has played all across the world in over 10 professional leagues, racking up over 500 career games and scoring goals all over the place. He will not be entering tonight's show on a horse, but he is on Zoom. Welcome, Racy Rabbit, to the show. How's it going,
Racy
man?
Rabbit? I'm good. You said Racy Rabbit.
I lost my breath.
Oh.
No, dude, I lost my breath. I couldn't do it.
You gotta do it again.
What's funny is Anthony before the show was like, "Dude, you're gonna mess up the intro." It's a lot to say. Yeah, and I ended up messing up.
I don't think you call people out, but I feel I'm pretty comfortable with you guys, so I feel like I can do that.
That's perfect. What's up, man? How's the quarantine life going?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks for having me on. Obviously, there's a nice little break. The quarantine's been it's been different for sure. We're back in Canada. We were down in Jacksonville, and you've been here about just a little over a month now. Been in Calgary, and then we went to go visit my old lady's parents up in Edmonton. So we're just kind of quarantining back and forth, just trying to stay away from everybody. But other than that, I mean, starting to do my workouts, starting to get healthy. I mean, we don't know when hockey's going to be back, but I'd like to be prepared. And obviously this is the time where the off season training starts for all the hockey players.
Hey, you're quite the seasoned veteran. We were going over like your Hockey DB page and we saw you had over 500 career games. So you must be doing something right with your body. What is it like in your off season to keep yourself in shape?
I don't know if I'm doing all the right things. I think I have a good agent. I've been fortunate enough to I've stayed away from some serious injuries for my career. I mean, I've been pretty healthy, knock on wood. I've been kind of doing the same thing. I think it went back from when I was a younger kid. I mean, my off seasons were, I mean, we'd be playing basketball, just being athletic and obviously doing a lot of different things. And I started working out when I was about 14 or 15, like with a full-time trainer. And I've gradually moved into another guy here in Calgary that trains with all the professional guys and eating properly. And I think it's pretty basic now. I mean, there's no excuses for any hockey players to not come into camp in shape. And I think that's, for me, is the most as I get older and the more wear and tear of my body is just the rest that I usually take a month off in the off season. That's right now. So right now is the time to giddy back up and get back ready for your body prepared for the next season.
So what do you got going on during that brief time away from everything?
Honestly, not a lot. I used to be able to eat what I wanted, you know, when I was younger, but now, I mean, I have a milkshake or I have a burger, it jiggles for another week or so. So my old lady and I were pretty trying to get conscious about what we're eating now. So I think that's most important, especially now with the quarantine, I'll be finding there's not a lot to do and it's a quick trip to the fridge and it's easier just to put something in the microwave rather than preparing it yourself.
Absolutely.
So I think we're trying to be health conscious there.
Yeah, definitely. So you talked about your younger days. We kind of dabbled into your junior hockey career. You started off your career in Saskatoon. What was it like going through the major junior route? We have actually, I think all the guys that we've had on this show, a lot of them went the college route. So we haven't actually talked to someone who has went the major junior route. What was the process like getting drafted into major juniors where you went to Saskatoon first?
Yeah, well, my minor hockey, I played in most of the top programs in Western Canada. The Airdrie Extreme, we won Westerns and Provincials, and the Pee Wee hockey there. I think Airdrie was probably number one, I guess, minor hockey program in Western Canada at the time. So I was pretty fortunate enough to play with some pretty good players and play against elite competition. And the NCAA wasn't something that was real big in everybody's mind here. I mean, obviously, the internet was just kind of getting started, so like we weren't fully educated on that, but the Western Hockey League was from day one, our, like every Western League kid getting Western Canada or OHL is that it's kind of the NHL for that age, you know? So if you get drafted, it's a pretty prestigious thing. And that's something we looked forward to for my family when I was younger, is that is you put myself in the best position to be drafted in the Western Hockey League. And from there, who knows? So I was pretty fortunate enough to go to Saskatoon. I spent 4 years there. I got to represent my country in the under 18, playing the top prospects game. A lot of the subway series now is, which is basically each league gets to play against the Russian team before the World Junior. So that's kind of the prelim for everybody judges for the World Junior. And then was honored enough to be captain my 19-year-old year. I won Humanitarian of the Year, did some work in the community there in Saskatoon. So that those days were always something I'm very fond of. And I started the year in Providence after I signed my first professional contract. I wasn't playing much, so they gave me the option to go back to the Western Hockey League. And I was fortunate enough to be traded to the team that was hosting the Memorial Cup. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but that's like the Stanley Cup of junior hockey. All three teams that win their league get to go. And then we were hosts. So we hosted, and then we were actually – we didn't go through the front door. We kind of called it. We went through the back door, but we ended up losing in game 7 in triple overtime to the Medicine-Hat Tigers in the league final. So I felt like we deserved to be there, and we went through the tournament, ended up winning, and that's something that I'll always cherish. My family got to be a part of that, and like it was on Sportsnet here. So everybody in Canada that follows junior hockey knows how prestigious and how hard it is to win. And I was lucky enough to host it, and then to hoist it. And then I got to cherish those memories with some really good hockey players and some guys that have gone on to have some really good careers, not including myself.
Yeah, I did take a look at some of the guys that you did play with. One of the guys that jumped out to me was Milan Lucic. And I have to ask you right away, is like, he played with you in juniors and you see him now. Is it the same type of guy, or has this kind of grinder role, has he developed into that grinder role?
I mean, my first time playing against Milan, I was in Saskatoon, and I knew he was – everybody knew he was tough. But then you don't know, realize how tough he is, and then you don't realize how skilled he is. So being – we're both Boston picks. I was kind of – he went pretty high in the second round, and then I see him at camp, and you're like, hold it, like, he's got some skill. But actually being on his line, he was my line mate. I mean, he had the he could skate and he could move for a big guy, but he had his hockey IQ was obviously one of the reasons why he's had so much success in the NHL. But at that time, you're like, wow. But I mean, I felt 4 or 5 inches taller playing with him. I'd be yapping my mouth around because I knew that he had my back. But at the same time, like, I felt comfortable where, like, if I was going to make a play, I knew he was going to make a play back or give and go or put the puck in the net. And I think myself, and we had another right winger, he's a Czech guy, Michael Rapik, who spent some time in the NHL. He was actually really fast. So I felt we gelled well, and we were the top line. But I think Milan's gone on to, I mean, he's done well for himself. He's kind of getting some heck here because he's a Calgary and Alberta, and, like, his contract's so big. But you look at he represented our country at the World Juniors, got to win a Stanley Cup, and you can't take that away from him. I'm very proud of him, and man, pound for pound, he's probably the toughest guy in the NHL and probably one of the toughest guys I've ever played with.
Yeah, I would definitely not want to pick a fight with him, that's for sure. He's definitely a bruiser for sure. So you were actually a smaller guy going through the ranks. It lists you as 5'9", which is like I love the smaller guys. Like, we're both, yeah, myself and my brother are both super small guys. We are attached to the smaller skaters. What's it like going through junior hockey, being an undersized forward, and dealing with that adversity?
I think it brought a lot of character out of me. Obviously, being a smaller guy, you gotta find something that works for you. And for as a young kid, for my parents, I was always on my rollerblades and working on my skating and my skill work. So I knew that if I was going to be a smaller guy, I'd have some skills. So I think just with skating, I was one of the quicker guys in my younger years. I was probably a little bit lighter, but I felt that was one of my strong points. And obviously just to prove yourself, like they say smaller players maybe might have the tendency to not go in the corners, but I love going to the corners. I love playing that muck and style. Like I can play in the American League. I was more of a third or fourth line guy, so I had to be a penalty kill or someone that's on a grind line that shuts down other players, top players. So I mean, I felt like being a smaller player kind of transform me into like my attitude as a hockey player, is where if you say I can't do something, I'm gonna go out and prove that I can.
And so you basically, you go out and prove it, you go play for Providence. What's that like, making that transition from major junior hockey to the pros? Obviously to us, big college hockey guys, we know that there is a major transition between college hockey and the pro level. Was there a big difference and a big jump from going to playing for major juniors to the AHL?
Yeah, you hear all the time that playing in junior to playing professional is a big jump, and it is, because I mean, you're playing with teenagers, and there's maybe 4 or 5 guys that have man strength. But obviously, going to the American Hockey League is the second best league in the world, where you're playing against every guy on the team was either a top end player on their team when they were younger, or were the toughest guys on their team. So there's a lot. There is a big jump, and for myself, I had to prove myself coming from obviously junior. And I wasn't a very high pick, so usually with the high picks, it's you prove that you can play. For us, you have to prove that you can play. And like I said, Providence was an awesome time. I got to spend three years there. I got to play under some really good coaches, played with some really good players. I think over half the players I played with were the team that beat Vancouver. I think it was in 2011 or 12 were the guys. Like, my roommates were Adam McQuaid, Donnie Boychuk. Like Tuukka Rask, like those are all the guys that I played with, David Krejci. And so, like, even playing for those 3 years that I was there, I still, the stuff that I was taught there is still that I carry on into my game today.
Two huge tough guys as your roommates, Adam McQuaid. And, oh, Jesus Christ. That's a tough house right there. That's unreal.
Yeah, but they're puppy dogs. They're funny guys. Like, I still talk to Johnny a lot over in Edmonton. And then Adam was like, when he first came to Providence, he wasn't like, I remember him working with Mr. V, which is the skills coach now in Chicago, that I don't know if he was really projected to be an NHL guy, but he was having a tough time with his skating, and we knew he was tough, but didn't realize how tough he was. And within 2 or 3 months, he was one of our best defensemen, and he put in the work, and he's just an overall, like, a great teammate. So I can understand why he's had so much success.
What's one of the biggest takeaways you have from like learning from those type of guys? I mean, obviously at that time you're not really learning from them, but you see where their level of play is at. What are you taking away from that? The guys that are really like on that high pedestal in the organization.
It's at the time you don't realize where they are. It's at the you feel like you're on the same level playing field because you're both at that level. But you mean for us, it wasn't comparing each other because we were teammates. You know, you bond, and then you also you'll see how a guy prepares. I always like to see how guys prepare games because for me, a lot of it was mental preparation, and then as I got older, it was obviously physical preparation, and you add both. But you look how guys prepare for games and just how they are in practice and their practice habits, and you like a lot of like in the American. I mean, at that level, you can't take a day off because there's always someone trying to take your job, and you look at them and it was business for them at the rink. And then when they're away from the rink, then there's a lot of laughs and there's some jokes, and it was just good to get some of that camaraderie. And that's though I think we've had some of the best teams in the American Hockey League for the time, like when we were there, is the success of the Boston Bruins organizations, where they build obviously great hockey players, but great people off the ice as well.
Yeah, 100%. I one of my favorite players plays for them is Brad Marchand. I know I got a lot of shit for that one.
Marchie was my my line mate, my last year in Providence. So I got to experience him firsthand. And I mean, he's a great player. Known like he's got 90 points, but just his actual best skill is getting under people's skin. It's kind of funny to watch, and now you see it firsthand, and like I can just see guys being frustrated, and he's done that to me in practice or on the bus or at the mall. But he's such a good person, and like he's one of those guys where you hate to play against him, but you're happy to have him on your team.
Yeah, definitely. That's 100%. I love watching his game. The licking is like everybody brings up the licking part. I'm like, he's such a good hockey player too. Like it takes away from it. It's just, it's absolutely unreal. So you move on from Providence and you go across the country basically to play pretty much all over the place. What was your thought process when making that decision to go from playing in the AHL to going over to Europe and playing all over?
Well, for me at the time, it was just I did the 4 years in the American League and I didn't get my bite. It was just a different challenge, you know, that I was looking for. And obviously not playing in the NHL is one of the biggest things that I can say that I never accomplished playing in my career. But I mean, I got to play in some pretty cool places, played in Norway and Japan. My first actual real experience was in Zagreb in Croatia. We're in the Austrian League, and that was an experience on its own. Obviously for me, the biggest thing was the culture shock, because you're used to USA, used to Canada, English, yeah. And then going to the grocery store, being able to talk to people out in public or asking for something. And that was the biggest thing for me. And being so far away, I think we were 8 or 9 hours ahead of everyone else in North America. So I'd have to wait for everyone to wake up after practice before I'll be waking up and everyone's going to bed. And like, I thought I was really good with culture shock until I went to Japan. That was the hardest part. We were in like northern Hokkaido, so that was like the very top of the Japan, like where I guess probably a 2 to 3 hour flight from Tokyo. So the city was huge, but it wasn't a very touristy city, so there was no English at all. So it was tough for me. And we only had two other imports at the time, so you can only hang out and talk to them for so much without annoying each other. But there's a lot of lonely times, but it was pretty cool. We got to go to Seoul, went to South Korea, got to go into Russia. We walked the Great Wall of China. So, I mean, my parents, like my mom comes to visit me everywhere we go. So she's get to experience those. Like if I never played hockey or anything, I don't think we'd ever get to experience those things. And when my career is all said and done, I think that's one of the greatest things is that I got to travel and see the world, not only just travel, but to actually live and experience those cultures. And I can share stories like this with people like yourself and anybody that asks. And it was really cool. And I got to play some hockey at the same time while I'm doing it.
So stories are the perfect topic right here. You got to give us one great story from playing in I'm still amazed where you played and that big culture shock. What's one of your best stories from those days?
I think when I was playing with the Nippon Paper Cranes, and Nippon was the big paper company. So if you guys wiped your hands or used the washroom, you probably paid my paycheck at one point when I was in Japan. The Chinese team would come, and they had a ref that was just like, we have a Japanese ref and a Chinese ref. So the Chinese team would come, and I remember we were winning like the Chinese team wasn't very good, and it was probably 8-0, and they just kept taking penalties and 10 penalties. So anytime we would get a penalty, the Chinese guy, the ref, would call a penalty. And it got so absurd where the Japanese ref was kind of just like, he's basically having a battle, like our team against their team, and then their ref against our ref. And it was so outrageous. And we got into, when after that game, it was like probably like 20 penalties each side. It was like 12-0 for us. So it didn't really matter. We were going to crush them. And then we were in the elevator in China. It was Chichihara. And we didn't really know about the infrastructure there. Like, we were told just to kind of stay in your hotels. I think because we're North American, we were fine, but the Japanese and Chinese, they have a history from going back from World War II. So I think they're still kind of nervous about that. But we got into the elevator and we're going up, and we're in the big high rise. We're in a beautiful hotel, but we're up, and the elevator would go up to 21st floor. Then it also stopped. It started swaying, and then it went down 3 floors as fast as you can, then up, down, up. And it did that for about 5 minutes. And like, at this point in my, and like, I was like, I think this is it. Guys are screaming in elevators, and we're just kind of looking and talking. Like, and then finally it opened up about this much. Then it opened again, and you could see our floor, and about 6 guys like samurai, like suicide, jump out the onto the floor. And I we were on the 21st floor, but I took the stairs remaining on that trip, and that was the scariest thing I've ever close. I came to death, but. I mean, it was crazy in China, and it's that country on itself. It's cool, but it's a different country on its own. That was another culture thing for me.
Yeah, so take the stairs when you're playing abroad.
I have a semi-irrational fear of elevators, so I can only imagine how freaked out I would have been during that. Time.
You look at each other, and then you realize, like, because this is about the same time. I don't know if you remember the video, but there was a lady that was going up an escalator at the mall in China. And it goes like this, and she throws the kid onto like the main floor, and then she goes down. So we've seen and then at that point, it was probably like a week. So I was just already in my head, and I was already psyching myself out. And I think I'd have to go back into my memory bank. But right now, I think that's one of the crazy stories that I've got to experience, other than just normal hockey stuff and having to fight for your sticks and your paychecks. I mean, that's pretty standard in Europe, you know?
Yeah, that is absolutely wild. So what's the play like over there? I mean, like, that's something that's absolutely, no pun intended, that's absolutely foreign to a lot of people, like that style of hockey. What's it like over there?
It's more puck focused, and obviously like every country has its own style, but I think because the ice is bigger, is that you like I think the European players they're better skaters, and they've learned to be better skaters at a younger age because of that. And I mean, there is contact, but I mean, if you have like in North America, you take a run at a guy and you hit him or you miss him, you're out of the play for a second. But if you run at a guy and you miss him, and like, say you're on the forecheck and the defenseman beats you up ice, I mean, you're basically about a zone away. So the angling and tactics of how to basically you're angling the puck the way you want, rather than if you like North America, it's all like the 1-2-2 and like, making the defense move the puck. I mean, from there, like if you miss your assignment, it's an odd man rush, basically. You got 2 zones to make your play, and that's basically the biggest difference for me.
Now, is it so you've switched it? You've played in different leagues. Are they all like a similar style, or is it different everywhere you've gone?
It's pretty. My first year in Austria, you're allowed so many imports. I think there was about 8 or 9 North American guys on the team. So it was more North American style hockey in Europe. In Norway, which is Scandinavian, it was completely different. We only had 4 or 5 North Americans, but it was all puck possession. It kind of drove me nuts for the first bit, because we'd be like on a 4-on-3 or as a 4-on-4, and the guy would get to the blue line and turn it back, and they'd do their neutral zone regroups and all their breakouts, and I just want to get the puck in. I'm so used to just dumping it in and getting in. Like, as long as it's 200 feet away from my net, then I know that I'm good. But
yeah.
it was a difference to get to be comfortable with that. And then once I was comfortable with that, the hockey's a lot funner, because you have the you have the puck on your stick, or you're getting chances to score with speed, and you're coming full tilt. And just learning how to defend that as an attacker was obviously something that added to my personal hockey experience, and to play defense. And like, I've always taken pride in being a 200-foot player. So it just kind of, I felt like it added something more to my game that I'm very thankful for.
So when you came back into the States after playing there, you did feel that big difference in your game with what you've learned from over there. Now, did you have any connections, like any North American guys, like connections on those teams that brought you there? Or how did you get started? Like, what made you, did you have an agent send you there, or how does that work?
My first year, I had an agent. He approached me, said they had a couple teams that were interested in just the best fit for me. My second go around was in Norway, and that was through a personal friend, James Sixsmith, who I played with before in Milwaukee, was playing there already in Oslo. And for me, it was kind of like a more of a job security thing going to Norway. And like, it was a good league, but I knew I was going to get my money. In Zagreb, we're fighting for our sticks, like I said, in our paychecks, and it's just kind of a hassle. And my last year in San Antonio was the year prior going to Norway. I didn't have a great year. I was injured. I hurt my hand. So my offensive numbers weren't where I wanted them. Plus there was going to be a work stoppage. I think it was 2011 or 12 where the NHL was going to be locked out. So it was just going to affect from the NHL's guys going down to the AHL, AHL down to the coast and so on. So I didn't know where, I didn't want to be August or September worrying about where I was going to play. They offered me some like a good contract, and I knew it was a good team where I was going to get a chance to win. Then obviously James being there, I was comfortable with, he said it's a good spot, and I ended up playing 3 years there, and was one of my favorite places to play that I've got to spend some time. And I still got friends I talked to, and Norway's a beautiful country, and I literally live right downtown Oslo. So that was, it's kind of a blessing in disguise that I ended up going there.
Yeah, and I know a few former Icemen have gone over to Europe. There's guys like Cam Critchlow, Tyson Fossett. They've gone over there. Do you still talk to any of those guys? Do they ever come to you for any advice on the play or anything like that from over there?
Yeah, I think I went to Europe last at the beginning of the year. For me, it was just kind of like a financial thing where, okay, I'm 20. I had a good year. I'm not 20 anymore, where I can obviously bank a little more bucks into my account before it's all said and done. It didn't work out, obviously. So I came back, and just like visa reasons with my girlfriend, and it just wasn't working there. But for Critch, they talked to me and Foss. I think they got an opportunity. Critch, though, I know he's getting his master's there.
Oh, nice.
So, I think for him, it was a no-brainer, and he wanted a different challenge. And Fawcett kind of bounced around his last year in the coast. So I think he, especially in Europe, you know, you're going to be somewhere for the full year. There's no trades. There's no like getting sent down. If you are going to leave, they're going to buy you out, or they're going to give you like find another spot for you to go. So I think it was just kind of some security and just knowing. And Manchester's a great spot in the UK. So for Critch and for those guys, I think they just did. They were just announced. I think they did sign a 2-year contract each, but I think they was announced that they did re-sign. So I'm happy for them. And both guys, I mean, they're fantastic players and they're great teammates, so I'm just happy that they found a spot that they enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. And so you come back to Jax, and what's that like? What you come back to a familiar team, you get finished up playing in Europe, you come back to the familiarity in Jacksonville. What's that transition like?
I think when we were coming back, I talked with my girlfriend, and we talked about where we wanted to go, because there was some other opportunities going in Europe. But I think at my age right now, there's an opportunity just to be in a place where I'm comfortable with and happy. And I think Jacksonville is probably one of the best places to play on the East Coast. Obviously, Smurf, I've known him for a while. My cousins have played for him for years prior, and I just built a relationship where there was some mutual respect. And I just told him, said, "Hey, look, this is what's going on," and he was awesome about it. He said, "Hey, I'd love to have you." They got a young, at the time I was coming, they had a younger team, and they weren't the highest in the standings. By the time I got there, we started getting some things turned around, and guys started scoring some goals, and guys that were obviously weren't playing got some opportunities. So I think without this stoppage of obviously with COVID-19, I think we were gonna at least have a good chance of making playoffs. I felt we were gonna make playoffs, but it was at least give us a chance then where we're playing our best hockey. And I think Jacksonville, just on its own, it's such a like Northern Florida is such a crazy, like a sports crazy area, you know. And there's some actually really, really great and hockey knowledgeable people out there that are their fans. So you, like, my first game to the last game we played, I mean, our lower bowl was sold out. There's the fans, they're passionate, and I mean, you can't beat the warm weather, right? So I'm a, I we were really sad that we had to come back, because I mean, when we got back, we went through a blizzard. We got here and there's more blizzards in Calgary. There's a blizzard. And, like, it's sunny right now, but it's supposed to snow again on Saturday. So
that's it's quite a difference there.
You know, Ashley, yeah. She's sitting right here. She was kind of ticked off that this whole thing happened and she wanted to be a beach bum for a bit.
Yeah, that's it's definitely a big difference. Jake's over there.
Robbed her of a couple of months on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crappy weather here too. I mean, it was 40 degrees and rain. So
yeah, I'm
in Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah, so you're Panama. Yeah, so you get to experience the back.
Well, I haven't. So I've been in Jacksonville and then Fayetteville for the last 3 years. So, and then the summertime I'm in Pittsburgh. So I haven't seen. I mean, the first time I saw snow since the year before I met you.
Yeah.
Was this year we played in Iowa for three games and we had some snow up there. So. I'm not looking forward to now that I'm retired. I know I'm going to be here for a while, so I will get the experience of winter.
It's fun for Christmas. The snow's fun for Christmas, and then that's it.
I had Christmas on the beach the last 4 years, so I'm not going to complain about that. Yeah.
Absolutely, that's what I'm used to.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're used to down here. The nice winter. It's 75 degrees during Christmas time, and then it's like the lowest it gets is about like 40 degrees, and that's pretty much it. There's the occasional 30 degrees, and it's like everyone goes into complete panic, but then like the rest of it's just normal.
Start talking about closing the schools.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I remember complaining about we were playing. This was in between when Wissy was overseas. I remember me and Critchie were complaining about playing golf in 50 degree weather for my time in Jack. So
it's kind of it's barbecue weather.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Nowadays, I'm just lucky to have it be not sweatshirt weather.
Yeah, when you're down there, you become a snow snob, and you're like, oh, it's freezing. Like in January, it gets cold in Jacksonville, and I'm like, I got to put on a jacket, a light jacket.
Yeah. Like inconvenienced.
I can't play golf today in shorts. Oh, damn.
Yeah. I can still play, just got to wear pants.
The struggles.
Yeah.
So what was that first meeting like between you and Jake? What was that like? What's that first meeting like?
Well, I think it was my second year back, and then I think he just finished the year with the guys. And I think the big thing I remember about Jeker is that he brought a lot of energy to the room. A lot of energy sometimes was before a lot of the guys had coffee. So
those 6 a.m. at the practice rink.
I think the reason why he's played for a while and he's played is that he is a good teammate. You know, like Jeker is he brings that positivity. He's a teammate that'll challenge you in practice, and he works, and I think that's what every coach wants. I mean, that's what I can remember, and I think that the positivity and obviously the energy that you bring into the dressing room, that's something I'll always remember.
Now you gotta pump his tires right back. You know that, right?
Oh, well, so for me, I had known a little bit about Wasey just from the guys before, because you were there for a couple games the year that I was there. The biggest thing for me was you kind of brought that veteran presence, kind of like Huntsie had, but you were super, super nice immediately. Like, I remember the first day I met you, like, we just moved into the hotel, and I went and saw Critchie because I hadn't seen Critchie in a while, and me and him were tight. But, you know, you were really, you especially with me being a younger guy there, you definitely were, I don't want to say up my ass, but you were definitely pushing me to get better in certain ways that I needed to, and it was good for me to realize, like, okay, like I was here last year, but there's still a lot of things I need to work on. So for me, it was just, I never even got a chance to say like, thank you to you for trying to make me a better player. And, you know, you were one of the best guys one of the best teammates I played with in Jacksonville, 100%. So
appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank Is that God. A good pump tire? Or?
That's what
honestly, it's all true though.
I'm at the point of my career where because of my age, but obviously because of where I played that I've been looked upon as a leader. But there's leaders that are older and they don't want anything to do with the younger guys. And for myself, I feel like it's time to give back. And I do a lot of camps in the summertime. So not only like doing that, obviously I want to be a leader, but I want to push these kids where, hey, like the first thing when I talked to Critchell, I said, the number one thing I'll ask a kid is like that on my team is like, what was your dream? Like, do you still want to play in the NHL? We may be in the SPHL or the East Coast Hockey League, but you still have a chance. And as long as you're trying to push and make yourself better every day, then why not? You know, because even if you don't make the NHL, you get an opportunity to play hockey at a high level, and why not do it at the top of your game? Even if you're not the most skilled guy, like I have a couple of friends that made $20 million putting it off the glass, you know, but they have something that they worked on every day. And I think for me, especially now, because I want to coach when I'm done, is that development side of the game. And if I see a guy, like I'm still working on my game. I'm 33 years old, going to be 34. And I still work on the skill aspect of my game, because you look at there's a draft that happens every year. So it's harder and harder to get a job, you know? So that's my biggest thing is bringing me back to the game, is the guys that are on my team, is that, you know what, I may be old, but I'm not done. You know, I'm not dead. As long as we're not dead, we're not tired. We're going to come to work. And when you work, you'll realize, and you win, winning's fun. And then that's how you build a culture. And that's what I want to bring back to Jacksonville.
That's the thing I saw right away. Just like I said, from not really, I hadn't met you and stuff before that first camp, but from my time in Jacksonville, it was the fans were incredible. The city was incredible. And we just missed playoffs that year that I was there. And the biggest thing I saw with Wasey was he had been there, he'd won the Mem Cup, and you know, he'd been on some high level teams. So that championship mindset, you know, bringing back to Jax was for me especially, I mean, I didn't know if I was going to be there the whole year or 2 weeks or whatever it was, but to see that kind of mindset in Jacksonville was a great, you know, breath of fresh air. And obviously, I mean, it worked out. You guys made the playoffs that year. So that was obviously huge for me as well.
Yeah, that was a great feeling for us as fans to be able to enjoy that playoff hockey atmosphere for the first time in quite some time here in Jacksonville, for sure. So what's it – you got the A this year in Jacksonville. What was that like to have the A bestowed on the sweater? What was that like? You obviously had the C in juniors, and now you have the A at the ECHL level. What was that like getting that letter?
Yeah, I mean, I've wore letters throughout my career, and like in Providence as assistant captain, and all like in Europe I've been assistant captain. Then for me to be in a leadership core with Garrett Hunt, I've known Garrett since he was 10. So wow. Like we played summer hockey together. Like I played against his brother. We were both drafted by Saskatoon. We both won a Memorial Cup. He was on the team of Vancouver as well with the Giants. So I know Garrett, and just for him, like to see how he's grown. I seen him when he was 20, then I hadn't seen him since I was 30. So in that time span, you realize how much he's grown. It ain't easy being a tough guy, but for him to obviously take on a leadership role, that's how we did. It was an honor just to share with him. Obviously, he was more intense, and we would kind of go off each other because he was intense and he'd bring the energy and he'd be like, I mean, I've never seen he's like Herb Brooks inspirational speeches between games, game 30 or game 70, but he's bringing it, you know, and you're inspirational for me. Like, and that's, you can't teach that. But for me, I was more of I've always been taught to your leadership is what you do every day and how you play and on the game. And obviously I was more of a skilled guy than Garrett. So we're different. We're like a yin to our yang, you know, sometimes I'd have to rein him back. You're getting like kind of fired up with the guys because I mean, he's not the most skilled guy, but he's the hardest working guy. And if you're not as work, like if you're not working as hard as him, he's going to have an issue with you. And that's what leadership. And I was a hard working guy. We both were cut from the same cloth in the Western Hockey League and in Vancouver. We played for Don Hay. I mean, we had, our practices, there'd be full out fights because everybody pushed each other so hard that the games were easy, you know? And that's what we brought from that team to our career. So we gelled and we meshed and we were great friends off the ice. And he was kind of, if I felt like didn't feel good or I didn't feel like, you know, just to my best, he'd kick my ass and say, hey, like there's eyes on you. Like you're not 25. There's no sliding in the middle. You're either up here. If you're not here, we'll find someone else, you know? And that's professional hockey and that's leadership to a T. So, I mean, you're not going to get along or agree with a lot of things and you might butt heads with the coach or the other teammates, but at the same day, we all have the same goal and that's to win. And just being a leader on a team. And obviously if someone doesn't feel comfortable enough to go to the coach, we can kind of be that bridge, you know, because I've seen it, I've done it. You've heard every excuse or you've heard everything, or if someone is having issues away from the ice or if they feel like they're not playing enough and they're kind of sobbing or whatever, or feeling sorry for himself, and you just tell him, hey, this is exactly how it is, and if you need someone to talk to, I'm there, you know. And if it's bigger than that, then we'll talk to a coach. And if you feel like you need more playing time and you feel like you're earning it, then that's another issue and that's another thing that you can talk with the coach. But for that time, I feel like just being a leader is on the ice and off the ice, and it's the full thing, and it's not just every once in a while, it's every day.
100%. I couldn't. That was truly well spoken. I mean, it's what was it? Has Garrett Hunt's play has it always been that way? I mean, we saw him in Jacksonville. That's where we know him best. And he was banging bodies, dropping the mitts all the time. Was that how he always played? Was that how he played in Vancouver, or has this developed over time?
Well, he started. I think you talk about me being an undersized guy. He's the ultimate undersized guy.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the most skilled. He was always just a hardworking guy. And in Vancouver, he was like the fourth line. He'll run around and fight, whatever. But you, when I seen him in Jacksonville, you watch his practice habits, and to play at that level, it's, you still got to be a good hockey player. You know, not anyone can just come in and step into to that role. He still has the penalty kill. He was a great penalty killer. He was tough as nails, but you could see that his practice habits, he worked. Like, he made, okay, well, I'm not a good skilled guy. Well, I'll work on my hands, you know, and he's working on stuff after practice. And he's working on things just to stay at that level. And then, I mean, he's probably one of the toughest guys I've ever seen in my life, you know. Like, he's smaller than me, but the fights that when he got the penalty minute record, I grabbed the puck and I made an announcement. I think that he's a guy that throughout his career made a lot of other guys feel safer. And I think there's a point for him. I threw him the puck and said, hey, if no one said thank you, I'm thanking you, because it ain't easy, especially knowing that you have to fight like a Kip Brennan or the guys that he's fought. And who was the big guy in South Carolina my first year? The
Gillies.
Yeah. I would not, like, those guys should be behind bars for some of the fights they've had.
Man.
But it won't get in the sport of hockey. But for Huntsie, that's it's not easy. And being an enforcer, it's a dying breed, but it's a breed that I was part of my whole life, my whole hockey career, and I'm always thankful to those guys.
So I have a funny story about the two of those guys. So my rookie year, I actually signed in South Carolina, and I was on a team with Gild. I sat next to Gild in the locker room. And we'd heard the myth of Garrett Hunt and the myth of Trevor Gillies. And we actually played our three exhibition games in Alaska when he was with the Aces. And I mean, I remember we had five or six young rookies, like guys that were just coming out of school. And we were hoping to God that those two were going to fight, just so we could see the two of them go at it. And then they were barking at each other. And then Gillies looked at me and goes, preseason, bro, I'm not fighting.
Yeah.
But we wanted to see those two guys go, because just like you said, those guys are absolute savages.
The funny thing with those guys, like, they're absolute savages, but they're the nicest guys off the ice.
Oh, absolutely.
And they make them, like, Garrett's been a fan favorite everywhere he goes. He'll sit and talk to anybody for 45 minutes, as long as he gets to talk and her story. And I've heard the same thing about Gillies, and I play Steve McIntyre, one of the toughest guys in the NHL. Like, and they're all just the nicest people all away from the rink. And they just have this, they just feel like they have this, I guess, like a big mama bear thing where they got to protect their cubs, you know, and that's like the protective
responsibility.
Come out.
Yeah. And both of those guys were great with me. I remember, especially me coming as a rookie to pro, Gillies was awesome. And then when I came into Jacksonville, I remember Huntsie came up to me immediately and befriended me. So yeah, those two guys are, again, there's something else on the ice, but they are two really good humans. I mean, you could call them right now and have a conversation with them just like you would when you're playing with them. So that's just that type of person.
Yeah, that's all. That is so awesome. He was definitely a fan favorite here in Jacksonville. He seemed to be the identity of the team in that inaugural season, 100%. Now, you talked about something. You kept throwing out the practice thing out there, and I know you guys skated a little bit at Jack's Ice a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You guys skated there, and I've never actually asked either. I've never asked Jake this, and I really want to ask both of you guys this at the same time. We play men's league there, and we know that ice is very, very special.
Yeah.
What's it like practicing at Jack's Ice, going from legit ice? Basically, the way we put it is we go from legit ice to Jack's Ice. And what's it like practicing at that place?
These are the hard-hitting questions.
Go first, because I got about a 45-minute spiel about this.
Yes.
Yes, let's go. Let's go.
Mine was interesting because when I came to Jacksonville, it was like late November. So starting to get a little chillier out. So the ice wasn't that bad. I had played in the South most in my pro career at that point. I played a little bit in Toledo and Adirondack, so those were like my northern teams, but like South Carolina, Knoxville, Fayetteville. And so it wasn't bad. I always thought of it as southern ice. Like, I'm sure you are, just being up north. Like, there's northern ice and there's southern ice. But when I came to camp with you the next year, man, it was, I remember me and Ustavsky were doing drills like maybe 10 minutes before guys got on the ice, and the ice was already bad.
Yeah.
Within like 3 minutes at the Zamboni cutting it. So I didn't have that big of an experience with it, because most of our practices when I got called up were at the Vet. But so my main kind of Jack's Ice experience was that camp we had together. So I'm sure you have a bigger bigger understanding of how bad it is.
For me, my first experience with Southern Ice when I played in San Antonio, Texas. So Jacksonville and San Antonio can remind me of the same, especially the ice surfaces at the AT&T and then the ViStar. They're the same. It's warmer in there because of the crowd, and then it gets choppier easier. But for Jack's ice, I think it was the funniest thing because after 10 minutes, it was just they would try to make it colder than it had to be, where the ice was perfect for 10 minutes and then it got choppy and then it was almost like layering on top of each other, so the puck would always fly. And me being an older guy, I didn't have to worry about practices or if I missed a pass, Smurf knew that like I was on. If I wasn't on, then it must be the ice. But for the younger guys, I would always go behind one of the rookies, and if they missed the pass, I'm like, hey, come on, man, no excuses, bud. No excuses.
I was 100% on the wrong side of that at some point.
So, like, because he's a rookie, and like you have to be good every practice. And then I would love to go behind Randolph and just. No. And then but we knew the ice was bad. The coach knew the ice was bad, but you don't want to be the guy missing passes. So, and I would just be like, Randy, man, like, there's no excuse. Like, what if the team has triple overtime and we have to play Jack's ice and we need you to make that? Then I would just be all like, I love doing practical jokes with that. But the ice, I mean, we only practice about 30 to 45 minutes. And as long as like for when we do practice at that rink, we'll get what we need to be done when the ice is good. But like at the end of the day, everybody knows that the ice, like it's a bigger ice surface. Cause I think it's Olympic. It is Olympic sized. And the biggest thing that really irks me is the figure skaters on there before us sometimes. And their edge work and their rivets, they really cut into it. So when you're trying to turn and like the Zamboni will have to do it two or three more times before it actually gets to where it needs to be. So that was the other thing with me for Jack's ice.
Yeah, they don't care about that for our men's league thing. They normally just flood the ice, and we get on there because they're like in that time crunch. So they flood the ice, and then you're just like you pass the puck, and it goes maybe like 2 feet, and you whip it. It's like, oh wait, what? Like what just happened? Not to mention the Zamdors are an absolute hazard. But
get your stick caught and break your stick.
Yeah, it's.
Go ahead.
It just reminds me of. I mean. Here in Canada, you have every single type of ice surface you can imagine, outdoor, indoor, the best, like Edmonton Oilers have the best ice, but it's ice, you know? So for me, I've never really been the one to complain about ice. So, I mean, I like Jack's ice other than when it's 6 a.m. and it's freezing in there and there's no heater in the back of the room. You're cold. That's the only issue I have.
How excited were you the one day in camp they cut the ice in between the first session and the Zamboni. Remember when the Zamboni broke and we had to push it down to the opposite end?
Like doing 2-a-days and a workout.
Yeah. I remember going to the locker room and Smurf and Max were like, it's just the ice is chopped up. We can't skate. And I remember walking in and guys were so happy. It was like, thank God we're done for the day.
What were those 2-a-days like?
Oh,
okay. Oh, yeah.
It was just early. I mean, the really first hard. One was at what? 8 o'clock.
Yeah. But we had to be there at like 6:45 or whatever.
Yikes.
And like you said, it was cold. There's no heater. I was obviously on my coffee already, where a lot of guys weren't. So,
I'll put on a heat pack and make sure I'm warm there, and then have my coffee or 2 cups of coffee, and then back onto the Jack site for your back to freezing.
It's a smaller locker room too, so you were kind of all over each other. I remember, especially in camp, we had extra guys that were on chairs. A lot of the rookies were in chairs. So I remember, like, you're trying to get dressed, and there's like 3 guys sitting in front of you in chairs. So it's.
Yeah,
it was a lot. I'll tell you that much.
How were those? How were the rookies? I mean, did you guys do anything, any cool stories with the rookies or anything like that?
No. I know just for camp, my first year there, I just wanted to kind of make everybody feel welcome. So we'd have I don't know if G can remember this. We'd have everybody had to bring a riddle. One guy had to do a riddle a day. You know.
Yep.
So, but it just got guys talking to each other and. But you'd get them out of the comfort zone to say a riddle in front of the guys, and it had to be a good riddle. You couldn't Google or you couldn't do anything. And we'd have guys would be on the ice trying to like talk to each other. They're talking amongst each other. So it just gets guys to get to know each other. It's just a team building, a team like type of thing, rather than just saying, hey, my name's Wacy Rabbit. I'm from Canada. I like country music, horses, you know. So it just kind of gets guys out of their comfort zone. And I know it's hard coming into a dressing room where half the guys know each other because either they played with each other or played against each other. and the other guys don't because it's their first year. So if you're comfortable and you are playing, you feel comfortable at a place, you're going to play your best. And that's the biggest thing, is they want to know excuses there, you know?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Now, I do want to start winding this down. I don't want to take up too much of your time. We've got a little rapid fire game that we do with our guests. Jay came up with some. I came up with some. Anthony's pretty much useless over there, doing nothing in the show notes as usual. So I got a few.
I'm looking at the rapid fire questions now. Actually,
do you want to go over the rapid fire questions and just make yourself at least some type of contributor to the show?
Well, no. Well, I have a question, but it's not rapid fire.
Okay, go ahead. Ask your question.
I actually have two. I had one from before. I wanted to know, with everything going on, COVID-19. You're in the house a lot. What are you watching? What are your shows?
Oh, I was on a podcast the other week, and I'm going to give the same answer. Whatever my old lady's watching, I'm watching. We watch.
Gotcha.
What is it? You Off the Handle, Tiger King.
Right now,
I'm watching. I just got to watch the last episodes of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan. I'm excited to watch the new two episodes of that.
Okay, nice.
And then Ashley hates when I do this, but I have to fall asleep with some type of noise. So it's just The Office or Friends. That's my go-to. Oh, you know, those are my feel good. If it's a bad day or a good day, I'm watching The Office or Friends.
Absolutely. Office is whatever.
And then Ozark. Ozark was, the new season came out. I love that.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad is my favorite TV show. And then that's basically it. Yeah.
Anthony, you had one more question? Correct.
I had one more question that I thought of while Wacy was talking. You said you wanted to get into coaching after your career. How long have you had that idea? Like, when did you think, like, I think this is something I want to do after I'm done playing?
It kind of came towards when I went to Europe.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like you, because they do things different, and I always just think, well, if I was a coach, and then it just kind of came. Like, you know what? I that's something I would like to do because it's always in my head, and I like working with player development, obviously being a guy that had to play either offensive, defensive side of the puck, that I've had to be lasered in on that, on the defensive, and just the systems and stuff that I've learned over my career that I feel like I could give back. And just, I feel like that's something I always want to do. And I like bossing people around. So I feel like
that actually makes me have a question now, is like, so you've played a ton of different styles of hockey. When you travel over to Europe, do you ever have that sense, like, you see the system that you're in, and you're like, what is going on? Like, what is this system? Like, and you try,
I should coach this team better.
Yeah, like you ever get in that before?
The hardest was in Japan. We got there, and we all landed, like the imports landed. And the biggest thing, because like every there's hockey players, and they're all the same. Like, you look at the NHL, you can step into it. The guys are pretty much skill levels. I mean, it's obviously not much if you're professional, but the hockey IQ is the biggest. So we got off the plane and we're in Japan, and these guys were running the practice, and they're going through their drills, and these guys look like NHL players. They're flying, they're making passes, and they're skating as hard, and they're shooting. I'm like, well, what do you need imports for? And then we got into a game, and then you realize these guys do the same practices over and over and over and over and over and over. So they don't have to think. But when they get into games, they have been coached at that level of to think quicker, you know, the hockey IQ. So for me, like, just being like, that's why they bring us over there, is because they have to play against the other team's imports or their top players, where like it's getting better. You look at every team in every country in the world, like Germany at the last Olympics finished second, and 10 years ago they weren't even in the world championships in that top pool. So it's becoming a global game. And like our coach at the time was forget his name, he's gonna kill me, Primo. He won a Stanley Cup with the Oilers in their heyday in the 80s and 90s. So he's now was coaching. So every coach over there had some North American. They're bringing that to that country. So I feel like I could do the same. And for me, that was the hardest thing for me, was obviously the language barrier, because we had an actual translator on the ice with us talking to the Japanese guys. But just like the hockey IQ and getting – I think that was probably the hardest thing for them and us, is the language barrier, but to understand it at the English part and the Canadian hockey, North American hockey.
What's up, everybody? Sorry to interrupt, but this portion of the show is exclusive for Patreon members only. For just $2 a month, you can get this and much more at patreon.com/thepowerplaypod. That's patreon.com/thepowerplaypod. So we've got a few fan questions. A lot of Iceman fans wanted to ask some questions. We're gonna wrap this whole show up with some fan questions. We're gonna hit you hard here. Pam Thompson wants to know, how does it feel to have the coolest name in all of hockey?
The coolest name? I don't know if it's the coolest name. Probably the most unique, but it's an honor. It's something that's always brought up in every single interview I bring up. Named after Cowboy, and Rabbit's my Native American name. So if it gets people, if they enjoy it, I enjoy it, as long as they're respectable.
Yeah, 100%. That's like definitely the question that everyone has to ask. Like, where does that name come from? And it's so popular. Like, I have people who don't even really watch hockey or play hockey or go to the Iceman games, but they've heard your name and they're like, where does that even come from? So
yeah, well, have you guys know the whole story?
No, we do not. That's what that is. That would be perfect.
Okay, so my family, they're big into rodeo, like we have horses and all that. So my first name is Wasey, and he was named after Wasey Caffey. He was a professional bull rider in the 80s and 90s.
Awesome.
And my middle name is Coleman, and it was Mel Coleman. He was a saddle bronc rider, and he was a professional cowboy. So I was named after two cowboys and became a hockey player.
So is that where you got the – because I remember when you got – I think when you were coming back to the Iceman, you had like an intro video where you rode a horse and you said you were coming back. How did that come about?
No, well, like my family, we still rodeo. Like I rope, we ride, and like my every single person in my family rodeos. My Ashley's starting to ride too. So we were on the ranch, and my whole life I've been around horses. So it's just something that I've always, you know. And then I'm trying to, once I'm done hockey, maybe I'll be a professional cowboy after when I'm not coaching.
So what made you want to do that video? Did you come up with that? Or was that something that the Iceman was like, hey, you should ride a horse and introduce that you're coming back to the team?
Well, I think they wanted to do something just kind of fits our personalities and where we're from. Because I know Huntsy did he was on his boat thing or whatever. And I think a couple other guys did something. And then for me, it'd just be cool to be on a horse and introduce that I'm coming back. And just, my dad had to saddle us up, and I just jumped on with my cowboy hat and I'm back.
So Misty, I'm terrible at last names, so I'm probably not going to read any more last names.
Okay.
So Misty wants to know, what made you decide not to retire and continue playing pro hockey?
Well, I'm fit, still healthy, and you know what? I want to win something before I'm done, and I want to do it in Jacksonville. So the fans have been great. It's been 3 years of kind of. Where our team's getting better throughout every year now that there's no excuses. The kind of the honeymoon of us being new is kind of gone. Now there's building blocks, and we have players coming in, and obviously myself returning, that I feel like if just given the right opportunity that we'll have a chance to make a long playoff run. And that's what I want to do is I'm coming back to win.
We would definitely want to see that on our end. That's for sure. Jessica writes in, she's got two questions for you. If you could have drinks with any living or dead person, who would it be and why?
Ooh, I think in honor of I was a big basketball fan growing up, Kobe, just kind of that Mamba mentality, and just kind of see how he prepared. And then I probably have to say George Strait. He's my favorite artist. I listened to George Strait since I was a kid, and still to this day. And to sit with him, and he's a big rodeo guy too, so we'd probably have some things in common. And he was, I think those two would be Kobe and George Strait.
That'd be quite the dinner for sure. So, and then she also asked, who was your biggest influence in hockey?
In hockey, I think most kids, I think she can say this, is his parents. I think those are the guys that my mom and my dad, they drove us to the rinks. At 6 a.m, you think we're complaining about Jack's ice. You haven't been in a Western Canadian hockey rink at 5 a.m. on a Tuesday at practice, you know? So I think, like, for me, I always make sure I got to mention them because they sacrificed so much for us to be here. And I think because I'm First Nations and Indigenous, we had my guys growing up were Regina Ojic, Sandy McCarthy, Stan Jonathan. They were like the tough guys in the NHL that were like me, you know? So, and then as I got older, I think Jonathan Chichu scored 50 goals for the Sharks. That's someone I look up to, and Finn Fleury. Oh. So now I'm older, and there's kids around here that I get to do camps with, and hopefully they see that I'm just a young kid from the res, a 5'10" kid from the res that wants to play hockey. If he did it, why can't I, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Awesome.
Who was your team growing up?
Calgary Flames, through and through. I'm a Flames fan no matter what. Nice. Ashley's from Edmonton. She's an Oilers fan.
Battle of Alberta there.
Oh, yeah, man. It's
awesome.
My parents will give her a cheap jab, and then we're just up there, and her dad was drinking coffee with the Oilers cup, and he gave me a look. And I said, I'm in Oiler territory, so I got to respect it.
That battle has been amplified over the last like few months. What's that been like? The Matthew Tkachuk, and then
is she Matthew Tkachuk's biggest fan or what?
Cassian. Oh, she loves Cassian.
I love him too. I get it. He's awesome.
He is the man.
So, but I think the Battle of Alberta, it's too bad this came to a pause. I think the way it was setting up, they were going to meet in the playoffs. And
yeah,
they haven't played in 20 years or something like that. And there's regular season and then there's playoffs. And if you can get something like that, then it's you're watching history and you're just thankful enough you're old enough where you get to recognize that you can see something like that and the passion. And I mean, Edmonton, and they're two huge, smaller market cities, but the passion, it's crazy. I mean, there's flags everywhere, even if in the summertime, and I'm sure it's the same in Edmonton.
Yeah. So two more questions and then that's it. Then we can let you go. We can do whatever you need to do. First question is, what is your solution to bringing the NHL season back? Everyone, we're talking about it. We're talking about NHL hockey right now. What do you think the solution should be? Should there be regular season games? Should there be right back into the playoffs? What are you thinking?
Or should they just wait till next year?
I don't know. Like I'm on both sides of the fence here because obviously I'm from Canada and there's nothing else to do, right? There's literally nothing else to do. So I want to watch hockey. At the same time, it is about the health of, like, if everyone's sick, then we have no fans and we have no job, you know, and that's most important is take the hockey away from it. We have frontline workers that are risking themselves. And if we're going to do that, then we can't have hockey, you know, because there's things bigger in life than hockey. But if they can do it safe and they can do it, then why not have a distraction for everyone that, especially going through this tough time, if you're stuck at home and you get to watch for 2 hours, you get to unplug your brain and just enjoy some hockey or some baseball or whatever type of sport that'll be on. But it'll be different. And I hope they do come through with something safe. Because right now they're talking about there's four locations that they're going to have somewhere, but hopefully do it safe and the players are safe and everyone is in, and it's going to be a big if, but hopefully it does. But I mean, everybody needs some type of distraction, especially right now. And what better than some playoff hockey, right?
Yeah, the NFL draft kind of took some people away, but then it's like we're right back to the same old spot. So it's like, damn it, this sucks that nothing's happening. But yes, the safety is absolutely the number one thing. Now, the final question, have to ask, favorite thing to do in Jacksonville?
Oh, the beach. We love taking our dog there, Atlantic Neptune. We love going up and down. And the golf, I mean, it's one of the best places in the world to golf. Jeeker can connect with that.
How's the game right now? I never got a chance to golf with the waves. How's the golf rate? How's the game right now?
I'm not so much to the right or to the left, more way to the right when I tee up.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because I left, but I mean, I used to golf a lot when I was younger and I was decent, but I mean, I golfed with Critch at the end and that guy is just on a league of his own and I stopped golfing with him because
he's a very good golfer.
He was on like a list of best pro athletes that golf. Yeah, and he was actually on that list.
Yeah. That's a questionable. They said he was a 5 handicap. I question the 5 handicap. He's a very, very good golfer, but 5 is a little low.
Other than Critch, who's the best golfer on the team that you've played with for the Icemen?
For the Icemen, John Albert's really good. I know I golfed with him, and Carlson's pretty good. But I think all these American guys, they're always like – for us, it's a different season, so we can only golf May to August, and then we're gone. But like a lot of these guys get to go somewhere and – the weather's a little nicer, so usually the American guys can rip the ball.
Worst golfer.
Yeah. Oh, Kyle Shapiro, and I hope he hears it.
That's a fact.
I went out and he was like decked out, had the best clubs, and I was like, because it was me, him, and Christian. He like had all the top gear, and I'm like, man, I don't know if I should be golfing with you guys. You guys are pretty good. He was worse than me. He's all golfing. I don't understand that.
Does he still have that blue wedge? The blue club?
I can't remember, but it was...
Oh, I remember he got that club the first time I ever played with him, and he like unwrapped it on the course and took it out of plastic, and I was like, dude, this kid's going to be nasty. And the first shot went 35 yards in front of him and didn't move.
Shafts was the kid for sure. Hockey. has had the best gear, and you just expect to be this world-breaking phenomenal hockey player, and then he's like, oh. And then he gets all these top – he gets out there cleaning his balls. He's doing all this, and then he's just right then to do.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. We've been through some ups and downs through this whole entire video chat. I appreciate you coming on, Wacy. We thank you so much. We hope to see you back with the Iceman next season. That does it, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Absolutely. And hopefully you guys all stay safe and this all passes. And now I guess we can really grateful when we go to the rink and hopefully we get a little more fans now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We'll be there. We'll be there, that's for sure.
All right, G-Kurt, take care of yourself, man. Appreciate
you. Yeah,
take care, Wacy.
And that was a great interview with Wacy Rabbit, Jacksonville Iceman forward Wacy Rabbit. That was one of my favorite interviews we've ever done. No offense to you, Jake. That was quite possibly my favorite interview that we've ever done. It was great having Wacy on. We really appreciate it. Boys, that does it for the show, though. That was an incredible way to end it with the Wacy interview. Do you guys have anything else to say? Of course. Of course you have something else to say.
Well, this is the second week in a row you're skipping over our setup of the week.
I forgot the news and notes and the setup.
And the news
and notes.
You forgot everything. What are you doing? All right, so Vinny's not the host of the show anymore. We're kicking Vinny off. In other news, I need to find the news and notes here. We're going to get right into them. So news and notes from around the league. No thanks to Vinny. Let's start with a couple news coming out of Columbus. The Jackets have signed Elvis Merzlikins and Jonas Korpisalo to two-year extensions. Merzlikins' extension is worth $8 million over 2 years. Korpisalo's extension is worth $5.6 million over the same span. The Winnipeg Jets and Dustin Byfuglien have agreed on terms to mutual contract termination. So not sure if we're going to be seeing him in the NHL next year or ever. Hopefully he refines his love for the game. I'd love to see Big Buff back.
I heard he has no intentions of coming back.
People say that and minds change. Looking at you, Travis.
Yeah, I heard the exact opposite. I heard that he was hopefully going to come back just in one play in Winnipeg.
Ooh, maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
We'll see. In other news, last bit of news here. There's not much going on. The Blackhawks chairman, Rocky Wirtz, has announced the release of President John McDonough. He was the president and CEO for the team. So they're looking, obviously, to get a new regime going. They won their three cups with their stars. They're looking to maybe start fresh, get some high picks, and make another run.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see the route that Chicago goes. I mean, McDonough was a part of all of those cups, and now it's a real – they got rid of Coach Q. Now they get rid of McDonough, and it's going to be quite the change in Chicago. It's going to be fun to watch. Andy, that was a great news and notes. Let's move on, Anthony. Setup of the week, where are you going?
Setup of the week, I'm going to Max Paddock. He spent a good amount of time with Regina Pat from the WHL, and he was just recently traded to the Prince Albert Raiders. But what I'm talking about is his awesome Bauer 2X setup. So it has the swords going through it. It has, like, it's almost like a sock graphic, but it's like it's like off-centered. Absolutely sick. Again, I talk about it all the time. The custom work that Bauer's doing right now is, with the screen printing, it's almost unmatched in what they can do as far as details. So it's just another awesome setup by them and maybe a future NHL goaltender in Max Paddock. I didn't look to see if he was already drafted by a team or if his draft year is coming up or
do
not.
Do your research.
I didn't do my research. That's why I'm saying I honestly have no idea. Maybe when I post the setup of the week, I'll include that.
Jake, you ever noticed that in the pros? Like Anthony and I are both gear guys. Like we love looking at goalies' pads and stuff like that. And designs are like one of our favorite parts about the NHL. You ever just look at a goalies' pads? You ever get into that? Like the style of it and everything.
More so in college, it's a little different in pro, especially in the leagues that I played in, because obviously if you're in the NHL or American League, you're on contract with the big clubs, so you're gonna get pads from them. But a lot of times in the East Coast League, you don't get pads for a good while, especially if you're only there for a little bit. So you're kind of stuck with your college pads. I know my goalie this year had green pads, and we were orange and black. So
you actually played in Boston with probably one of the sickest style, like one of the best goalies for style in Thatcher Demko.
He had some crazy pads. He had some really cool ones. I remember going in the locker room when he got his new ones. I remember specifically, I want to say it was my junior year. he played World Juniors. It was either one of the two junior senior. He was the goalie for the World Junior team. And he had some unreal pads with the stars and stripes and stuff. But yeah, Demmer always had a good setup. I forget what company. I think he might have used Brian's.
Yeah,
I think he's because yeah. we were a Bauer school, so I think we had to have at least one goalie that had a Bauer setup.
But I think I'm back then sure he had Bauer. I think back then he had the Bauer sock. I'm gonna look it up right now, but I think he had Bauer. Okay. It was like an all gold set with the red trim.
Yeah, he had a few. He got a couple different pads every year.
That's
so
awesome.
I remember at one point he had Brian's pads, but like a Bauer blocker or a Bauer glove or something like that. Like he's finicky with his gear. He was always using different stuff. But yeah, no, Demmer's had some great ones. And I think it's cool to actually, you know, as much as I hate to say it, one of my favorite setups in college was Matt O'Connor when he was at BU, as much as we hated BU. he had the all red with silver, and then he had the BU logo split in half when he closed his pads. I always thought that kind of thing was really cool. I'll give a quick shout out to my buddy here. I've been playing with him since I was 4 years old, Zach. He's one of the guys who hangs out with us and go play golf and stuff. He had a pair of pads back when I was probably away at school by then at high school. He had black Brian's pads with like scary clowns on them.
Oh shit.
I'll have to see if I can get a picture from him and put it to you guys, but it was one of the coolest and freakiest sets of pads I've ever seen in my life. So
that's awesome.
Those were really cool.
That is awesome. Yeah, we're big gear guys, and that we do this segment every week. Anthony, I forgot to mention that when we were discussing what segments we do every week, it starts its call ups and its setup of the week, because Anthony has to give his goalie plug every week. But absolutely. Have we covered everything now, Anthony? Am I doing? Can I get back into the?
That's about it. Except I did look up Thatcher Demko's setup. You're right. They were all Brian's, but he used a Bauer Trapper.
That's right. I remember one of those years he used a Bauer, one of the two. Like I said, I couldn't remember.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Great style, Thatcher Demko. Anthony, that's a great setup of the week. On that note, folks, I hope you guys enjoyed the Wacy Rabbit interview. We've got more interviews lined up. Jake is now in charge of all the interviews on the show. He's going to be loading everyone up.
We're going to line them up.
Yeah, we're going to have some for the spring interview series. We'll work on a name
just
for
keep,
it, too.
Just keep saying it. It'll be summer eventually, so just keep saying it.
That's true. Maybe if we keep saying it, summer will come quicker.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the summer interview series is coming up hot. The boys, we've got it all loaded up here. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to another episode of the Power Play Podcast. Anthony, do you have any final words?
Nope. I said my piece.
Jake, you got any final words? Welcome to the show, buddy.
Yeah,
welcome to the
thanks
show.
For bringing me on. I'm very, very excited and grateful to be talking hockey with you guys. This is going to be my new hockey outlet now that I'm done playing. So thanks for welcoming me and excited to see what we can build this to.
I've used the phrase a lot now. He is stuck with us. You're going to be seeing more of him on the pod. I want to remind everyone to please check out our Patreon page. It's quite possibly the most important thing that we have going on right now on the show. Our Patreon page, that's at patreon.com/thepowerplaypod, patreon.com/thepowerplaypod. It's where you can help support the boys. It's help funding our studio, help funding everything that we do. We're trying to get merch going here. We're trying to get everything going for the fans. We've got great content on there, bonus content. We've got trivia. We've got interviews. We've got a Facebook group. The Facebook group is probably the most important thing on there for the $2 tier. You join that group.
If we're in the group, you're all everyone who joins Patreon is in the group. It's a great way to talk to us, talk to all of a lot of other like-minded hockey fans all in one spot.
Exactly. When we start doing fantasy hockey next season, that's gonna be a hub.
Fantasy hockey.
Exactly. Yeah. So you get a lot of exclusive stuff, content from us on the Patreon page. Please go support the page. Don't forget to follow us on all social media at the Power Play Pod, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Drop those reviews. Hit the subscribe button. Share. On that note, folks, for Anthony the backup, for Jake, I am the one and only Vinny Milani. Thank you, and have a good night or day whenever you're listening.
See ya.
Bye.